And I have to say, I grew up in kind of a tradition, a church tradition, where you sort of sat still and you kept your hands in your lap. And there's still some element of that, I think, where we look around each other, we go, if I was a little bit animated, would people look at me kind of weird? But when you stand in the very back by the glass, and you see the kids in the back row, if you haven't done this yet, they don't seem to notice that anybody's watching. And boy, they just enjoy the music like nobody else does. They're like up there just like shaking and moving. It was just good to see the joy. You know, and a week ago, I wasn't here. Some kids and myself went over to Shiloh Bible Camp, and they made these little videos based on a biblical story. But I wasn't near the whole time. So you had different points of the day where you can get away and you can just go and talk and, you know, kind of reunite with some friends who you haven't seen for a while. And so I was talking with a friend and just asking him, how's your church going? You know, what do you guys do about ministry? And he says, well, how are things on your tithe? And I told him how it was going. And he said, you know, you guys really have a good thing going there. Okay, I mean, yeah, maybe. Okay, thanks, Leona. We need that. I thought, you know, we do. And I thought, you know, you don't always see it when you're living, like, in it week after week and a couple times a week. But that's like, what do you mean we have a good thing? Like, you know, what do you see? Because he'd been here a couple times in the last few years. And he goes, you know, just when you walk in, he goes, there's just a sense of camaraderie, being together, a sense of family. And I thought, you know, I think you're right. And as I was standing in the back, I was looking around the room. I thought, you know, I feel like in this room, there's my brothers. There's my sisters in the faith. There's these younger people. I feel like in a sense, they're kind of my children in the faith, even though they don't live with me. But I see them week after week. And if they're misbehaving, I wouldn't mind giving them a little snap, get them back in line. And I look at you guys who are older, and you are like my fathers and my mothers in the faith as we grow. And especially the longer you are here, the more you get a sense of that. And I would say, if you don't have that sense, stick around. You know, show up more often. There are some good things happening in this family of faith. And I think that segues nicely into our book of 1 Timothy here. So we're in 1 Timothy chapter 5. But I do want to start in chapter 1 just for some recap. It's always good to remember the context of where you're reading. So this says the first letter of Paul to Timothy. Interesting, isn't it? This is from one person to one person. It's a very personal letter. It's not like when Paul writes to a whole church and he's giving advice to everybody. Here's what you ought to do. But this is from a father to his son in the faith. In fact, look at chapter 1, verse 2. To Timothy, my true child in the faith. See that? It's a relationship of a father to a son. It's the family of faith. It's very personal. And so he gives us some advice here in chapter 3. I think we have our key verse. He's telling them that you may, this is chapter 3, verse 15. Notice very personal. It says, if I delay, it says, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God. So look, we are in a household of faith. We're part of the household of God. And so Paul is telling Timothy, this is how you behave when you're in the house. Kind of like you come and visit at my house. There's some things we do, and there's some things we don't do. I imagine if I came to your house, there's some things we just don't do. And so he's telling him, here's what the household of faith is like. And in chapter 4, verse 12, I think one of the teenagers' favorite verses, everyone loves this one, let no one despise you for your youth, Paul tells Timothy. And all of us young people, when we were young, I'm like, that's right. I'm going to know what I'm doing here. Don't look down on me. Don't despise me. But he says, but set an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. And so now we come to chapter 5, our passage for the day. And we'll just go through verse 16. So the first couple paragraphs here. But I imagine that Paul, perhaps knowing Timothy, could imagine how at this point, maybe he's feeling a little bit puffed up. Like, you know, it's my job to come and set things in order. But he reminds him, you are in the family. And in the family, here's what we don't do. So verse 1 says, do not rebuke an older man. It's like, you know, that older man, that's your dad. Younger people, if you look around the room, the older people, that's like your grandfather. So if you want to turn around and look at him for a second, there's your grandpa. There's your dad. He says, don't rebuke him. If you wouldn't talk to your dad like that, don't talk to one of the elders of this body like that. It's that idea of honor. We respect them. And I like that Phil brought up this morning. We honor our father and our mother. And that's how things work in the household. And I'll admit, sometimes I kind of feel like, you know, I think I ought to give, fill in the blank, a piece of my mind. Because, you know, I know how things should go, and they're not doing it right. I think all of us as young men have had that experience. I think I know what's best, and I'm going to set you straight. And Paul says, no, Timothy, you're not going to rebuke him, but you're going to encourage like you would your father. And so, yeah, sometimes, and we have some younger men who are elders in this room here, and perhaps they need to have some conversations with some of our older men, but not to rebuke, but to encourage. That's how we treat each other in the family. So my first point is, it's never harsh. We don't speak harshly to the older men. And it says, younger men, you're our brother. And I think about my own brothers. I have two brothers. And I think anybody who has brothers can imagine how this conversation could go, but you treat them as a brother in the best way possible. Okay? I won't ask him if he has any good brother stories, but you can imagine brothers, yeah, get into some trouble together. But you know, the idea is we love each other, we care for each other, family matters. And that's what Paul is telling. And he says, also the older women, they're like our mothers. And young men, how do you care for your mother? Can you honor your mother? She cared for you, and now you hold her in a place of esteem and honor. So, talks about also the younger women as our sisters in all purity. So this should be our relationship to each other, like we are a family. And as we look around, do we see our fathers in this room and our brothers, our mothers, our sisters? As we look around, do we have that sense of family? This is how we treat each other. We encourage each other. We treat each other as family. And there's a pure motive about it. So certainly young men toward young women, there's a purity and a rightness in our relationship. There's no ulterior motive. And then he changes gears a little bit and says, regarding widows, here's how we treat widows. And I imagine the ancient world, there was a lot of death, war, sickness, and someone could suddenly and easily become a widow. And culturally speaking, in the Roman Empire, women who were not useful for something were often discarded. And I think that's one of the unusual things about early Christian churches, is that they valued those who didn't have really anything to give back. So you might ask, well, what use is a widow? I mean, she can't provide anything for us. Can't necessarily like do anything to make my life easier, better. And yet Christianity says, but these women are valuable. They valued women, the early Christian church did. And so Paul says, honor the widows who are truly widows. And I think the thought there is those who are unable to provide for themselves. And I think it certainly includes, especially that time, women whose husbands had died, so there's no means of providing for their needs. I think it also has kind of a broader scope. I mean, are there those in our culture here who don't have a means to provide for themselves? who, if nobody comes through for them, they're in bad shape. You know, in some ways, I think our culture has sort of made a little bit of an end around on this one. I think Social Security perhaps provides a little bit of something. And not as bad by itself. Our retirement savings, I think we prepared ourselves in such a way that we don't want to depend on anybody else. But you know, in these days, a woman, when her husband died, if she had no children, she was in a bad place. It was a bad, bad place to be. But he says, honor them, those who are truly widows, who have no place else to turn. Honor them. That could mean a couple of things. Could mean like in your attitude, the way you treat them, we honor. But also could mean financial too. If you look ahead here, the next verse 17, it says, let elders who rule be considered worthy of double honor. Well, he's talking about pay. And I think the same word applies here. He's saying we ought to financially support those who are truly widows, have no other means of support. So in verse 4, but, there's a but here. So there's a responsibility on our part, but there's also a responsibility on the part of the widow to go to family first. It says, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness in their own household and to make some return to their parents. For this is pleasing in the sight of God. And that phrase really struck me when I read this. This is pleasing in the sight of God. It makes God happy when we take care of our families. Can we agree? And as we watch parents age, it seems that we have a duty and a responsibility to care for them. And that's the place where you should go to first. You should go to your family first. And kids, you should care for your parents. He says, she who is truly a widow left all alone. So without kids, without grandkids, where else do you turn? Well, it says here, she has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. So when you have nowhere else left to turn, yeah, you just pray and just say, God, is there some way that you can provide for me? And yes, God will provide. And I love to see that God oftentimes provides through his people. You know, in the book of Acts, when it first mentions the office of deacon, and we had that just a few weeks ago, the job that they were doing, it was caring for the widows. Those who were without anyone to care for them. They were, as it says here, left all alone. Well, the church took care of them. This became the family of faith. And then in verse 6 says, but she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. So if you have nothing, it's funny how it has a way of turning your eyes toward God. Just the opposite of self-indulgence, isn't it? Self-indulgence, your eyes and your heart, your concerns, they turn inward. And I've kind of found the times when I had the least, it seems like that was the time when I focused most on others. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? Those, when you have the least, you tend to look outward. And you tend to bring God into your situation. When you're well and everything's good, I think your mind and your heart tend to turn this way. What can I do for me? I'm rich. I'm increased with goods. I don't have need of God in this situation. So verse 7, Paul tells Timothy, command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his own relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I think some translations even make that worse than an infidel. So someone who is without faith. So I think there's this idea that we need to look after our own families. When we don't, other people have cause to slander the name of Christ because of our lack of care for people who are really under our care. When my own family is suffering and I don't meet those needs, it brings reproach from the world on the name of Christ. And I think we need to be a little bit careful here too, just what, how we define needs. It's not that my neighbors need to look at me and say, well, boy, your kids aren't dressing so hot these days. You could like up their fashion points a little bit. I don't think it's that. But I think it's meeting the genuine needs of those who are under your care. And when I have to go outside of my own home because of my own, either I don't care, my own lack of care, my own lack of interest, and my family has to turn to somebody else, it brings dishonor to Christ. As I name the name of Christ, if I have to go elsewhere, or my family has to go elsewhere, it dishonors God. And so I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing here, that physical care and spiritual blessings seem to be intertwined, don't they? Someone who does not care for their household has denied the faith. I'll say it one more time, but just so we can catch this. Somebody who does not care for their own household, you have denied the faith. So the physical and the spiritual seem to be intertwined. Christ has called us in the sense that he has met our spiritual needs. So he says, as you have the ability to meet someone else's physical needs, we need to do so, especially in our own families. So our next section talks about a particular class of widows who are to be honored. And I'll just call these honored widows or honored women. And at first I struggled with this passage. I thought, what do you make of this? There's some very particular and peculiar, I thought, requirements for those who were to receive honor, whether financial or otherwise. And I thought, what do you make of this? Like one verse says, you have to be 60 years old. I'm like, you have to be 60 to get help from the church? That's, what if you're 58? Is that close enough? But I think there's a different thought here. And I struggled with, do we only support those widows who meet these sets of requirements? Well, I got reading on this and listened to a couple sermons, and all of a sudden the lights went on. That happens when I study at night. The lights go off. But the lights went on. That's it. This is what he's talking about. It's not just those widows who are needing support, but there are a class of widows who deserve special honor and those who serve in a special way. And perhaps they are deserving of monetary support for their service. But it might just be the recognition that we need to recognize those women among us who have lived well, who have served well, and who need to be ministering among us. You know, statistically speaking, half of us in this room are women. And there's a particular ministry that I think women have toward women, and especially older women who have walked life's pathway and have learned a thing or two along the way. There is something they have to offer that, you know, men as elders, you just don't have it to give. And I think those of us who are kind of middle life men, we just don't have it to give. But those of you who are older women, you have something to offer that the women of this church, who I would even say are the backbone of this church and any church, you have something to give to them that needs to be received. So if these next few verses, if you go, that's me, that's me, that's me, this, in a sense, this is your call to get busy. There is work to be done, and it's yours to do. And younger women especially, if you hear this and you go, I need somebody like that, seek them out and say, man, I need that. Speak into my life. Say the words that I need to hear. So let's get into it. So verse 9, let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age. Interesting. So an older woman, now especially at that time frame, 60, well, I might think, I don't feel that old at 60, but perhaps in the ancient world, 60 was a fairly advanced age. John MacArthur thought this is a point in life where women are no longer desiring to have families, which I thought that comes a whole lot sooner. Done with that for now. But he thought at that point, this is where women were no longer making their own families, but they're ready to speak into younger families. But not less than 60. I won't ask any woman to raise their hand either. I might not be able to speak anymore after that. Having been the wife of one husband, I think the idea is similar to the direction to the elder, who's to be the husband of one wife. Not necessarily you've never been remarried, or if there's been a situation, a husband had died and you got remarried, that's okay. In other places, Paul says that the younger women need to get married. And I'll have the same direction here too. But the idea is that you are a one-man woman, that you are devoted to a family. You're not about, going from one guy to the next. And it seemed like in that day in the Roman Empire, divorce was a somewhat easy thing to do. More so for the men, the women. But yeah, you could just go from one man to the next. But he says, in this case, it's a woman who is in a one-man woman. She has a reputation for good works. If someone were to ask, what do you know about? And you can fill in the blank, whosever name you want to put in there. And they say, oh, she does so many good things with her time. She is just someone who gives and who cares and is about good works. That's your reputation. If she's brought up children, she knows what it is to raise kids. She's been through those trials. And I've seen some pretty good kids, but I've never seen a mother who has not been pushed to the brink by her children. And as you look back, you can say to a younger mother, I've been there. I've done that. I thought about strangling them, but I didn't. And they all made it, and it's good. So a woman who has raised children has shown hospitality. People have been into her home. They know what her life is like, the real life. I was thinking this morning, as we're all sitting here during breaking of bread, and sometimes I show up and I think, man, you guys all have life figured out. As I look at you, you're all sitting there, and as you guys go home, I'm sure everything is just fantastic. And I think sometimes, man, my life's a train wreck. If you guys knew some of the things that I struggle with and deal with. But I've heard people say, I've coming here on Sunday morning, like, you guys all, you're all so perfect. And then I get to know you. And you're not. You're actually a lot like me. And I think, yes. But we don't know that. We don't get that here, I don't think. It's good to be here. But you know what? It's better to cross each other's thresholds and to really know each other and realize, man, we're all messed up and broken. But you know, God's good. I'm broken, but God's good. So hospitality. Wash the feet of the saints. Perhaps literally, but I think figuratively, this is a menial job. It's servant's work. So it's a woman who has been a servant. Done the things that we say, oh, I don't do that. Like, sorry, I don't do dishes after Wednesday night meals. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. It's a woman who digs and says, you know what? It needs to be done. I'll do it. Oh, sorry, I don't cook. I only lead Bible studies. No, I says, Paul, it's not that kind of woman. You want to find the woman who gets the work done and serves. And she's cared for the afflicted. And finally has devoted herself to every good work. Is this a lofty list? But you know, if we don't get too nitpicky, I think there are women in this room, if we look for them, who fit this model. And man, I think we need to honor them. It would almost be good. You know, Paul says, put a list. He says, enroll them. Make it known, these are women who you can go to, young mothers, young women. If you want to know how to live life, this is who you should go see. And I'll tell you, it wouldn't be horrible if we had a list like this, would it? And I can say, I wouldn't mind having a list of older men like this. But in this case, Paul's talking about the women. And I think given the previous paragraph, it would not be inappropriate if there's a need to support them financially for the ministry they do. I think it would be a good thing. So he also goes on. Here's some things, though, who not to support. And I would almost say not support yet. These may be women who are on their way. But he says in verse 11, but refuse to enroll younger widows. Kind of wonder why. Do they not need the help? He says, here's the reasons. For their passions draw them away from Christ. They desire to marry. And so they incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. So it's quite possible that a younger woman, if her husband dies, might think, well, you know what? I'm just done. I'm never getting married again. I'm just going to serve God. I think perhaps being a nun comes to mind. I'm not sure. But Paul says, no, don't do that. He says, as a young woman, you still have a desire in you to have a family, to be married, to have children. If you are younger, that still is the course that your life can take. And he has some reasons for it. He says, for one, as you seek to raise a family, you'll be drawn away from Christ, perhaps to an ungodly husband. I'm not sure exactly if Paul had someone in particular in mind. Perhaps he did. He'll mention this later on. But he says, besides that, they learn to be idlers. So as a younger woman with energy, with passion, if you don't have a task to do, it's super easy to get involved in things that don't need to be done. Instead of things that ought to be done, the things that don't need to be. Just being idle. Going about from house to house. Not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies saying what they should not. But instead, let's do this. Verse 14. So I would have younger widows marry. If you're young, be married. Bear children. Go have kids. Manage your household. So I would say, just doing the things that make up life. These are the things that we do. We have families. We have jobs. We manage our homes. We raise kids. And Paul is telling Timothy to tell the church, do these things, young women. Have families. Raise your kids. Manage your household. If you don't, he says, you give the adversary an occasion for slander, saying, don't give Satan an opportunity to slander God's people. In other words, like, look at her. I mean, she could be out raising a family, but instead she's just kind of jumping around house to house, gossiping, doing things she ought not to do. So Paul says, don't do that, but be about the business of the family. And in verse 15, he makes a point, for some have already strayed after Satan. And I said, doesn't say who, and I'm not sure it's important, but he says this is what happened in that case, and here's the remedy. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. think about the implication. Bring her into your household. Let her take care of you. And finally, let the church not be burdened so that it may care for those who are truly widows. So the heart here is, don't be a burden on your church. And I've kind of found this irony. It seems that those who have sincere and genuine needs are often the least likely to want to receive it. Has anybody else noticed that? Those who really have a need, and you say, can I help you? And they say, no, I think I'm okay. Like, you know, I think actually we really could help you. It would bless me, and I think it would certainly be a benefit to you. But those who don't have genuine need, oftentimes they're the ones who want to receive or who seek to receive. So the point here, don't be a burden. But you know, if there is a genuine need, you're not a burden. Okay, it's a joy to help and to serve. And I would just make a last point. Kind of we have to take from this. Know what the needs are. As you look around, do you see people or know of people who have needs? And I was thinking about the apostles there in Acts chapter 6. What they were doing early on, the deacons, looking after the widows, those who could not care for themselves any longer. If there's some need here in this room, in this building, who should you go talk to? Man, come find one of the deacons. It's what we do. Okay, we are happy to help. It brings joy to help when there's a real need. To those of you who are women, and especially if you are in your widowed years, continue to serve. It's not time to hang it up. There are young women who could use a little encouragement, a little guidance, just to have you there to walk with them. Say, you know what, I've been down the road. So don't quit ministering. Don't quit serving, older women. You are needed and you are valued. So hear that. And my last thing, let's just live like a family. As we look around, this is our family of faith. And honestly, some of you, I talk to some of you more often than my own brothers. Now, granted, we live out of town, and we still stay in touch, and I think we're close. But some of you have really become like the family of faith to me. And for that, I'm thankful. I have a heart of gratitude toward God, toward you. And we need to live that way. We need to know each other and help each other and to honor and to value each other. So I was thinking, as we're closing here, sometimes it's good to sing a song when you finish. And I wasn't quite sure which was most appropriate for this sermon, but I was thinking number 295, we'll just sing a couple of verses, but I love this. The idea of us walking down a path together, as it says, he leadeth me. He leadeth me, O blessed thought, O words with heavenly comfort fraught, filled. Whatever I do, whatever I be, still it is God's hand that leadeth me. As we walk down this road of life together, this pray be God's hand that guides us as we do this as a family. So we'll just sing one verse and the chorus, and then we'll close. We could even stand. we're thankful for your hand of leading in our lives. Just pray we would see the work before us. Just pray especially for those of us who are widows indeed. Just pray we'd have just eyes to see the need, hearts that would meet the need. Just pray for those of us who are older and have just years of wisdom, experience to give. Just pray for the ability, the timing to give. And for those of us who need to receive, just pray we'd have hearts to receive it. We're just thankful for the family of faith we have here. Indeed, you have blessed us, and we are thankful for it. And so we just pray this in Jesus' worthy name. Amen.